Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, I'm Diane Stemple on Heritage Radio Network's Cutting the Curd. Today I am excited to have in studio Brian Kaiser and Lee Friend, authors of the very recently published Composing the Cheese Plate. Welcome.
Thanks, Sam.
I love to have people in studio, and I love to have the two of you.
Well, it's great to be here.
Anyway, so what's it like adding author to both of your long resumes?
What's it like? It's been an interesting phenomenon. People sort of had to point it out to me. Like, you're a published author now. And I was like, oh, I guess I am. I didn't think about that as like a thing, but it is. So that, you know, one more thing on the resume.
Right. Yeah. And how about you, Lee?
I mean, I kind of agree. It was such a long process that, like, finally, now that it's here, we're kind of like, oh my gosh, I guess we actually did this. We can add the title of authors to our our long list.
I'm a published co-author. Titles.
Yeah.
Ah, right. So when was the idea for this book born?
About 5 years ago, I think, four, an editor from a publisher called me and said that they wanted to do a book on cheese plates, and he'd been researching it and thought our cheese plates were the best, and asked if we would be interested in doing doing a book. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And so we started.
What was the first idea? What was the first? How was it going to look at first?
Well, we kind of disagreed on how it would look, and we ended up not working with that publisher. So his idea was very simple. He wanted one recipe for a condiment paired with one cheese on each, like, two-page spread. For listeners who don't know who we are, I own a restaurant called Casa Lula that has really good food, but also we do a lot of
cheese plates.
And we are known for the things that we pair with cheeses. We have many, many house-made condiments that we serve with the cheeses, and those were created by Lee, who was our pastry chef for many years. And
you're very well known for that. I mean, that is you. It's a cheese restaurant.
Yeah. We're known in the cheese world.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like we can't walk down the street without getting mobbed, but we are. We're well known amongst people who care about cheese, which is more and more people every year. So that's great. But the way we put together a whole plate, and Lee can maybe talk about this a little bit more, is complicated. It's not that this cheese goes with this pairing and we just put them together. Each cheese plate, we make choices about what cheeses, trying to capture a range of milks, cheese types, regions, and then pair them with a variety of things, from pickles to mustards to brittles to fudge, compotes, fruit curds, on and on.
Many of which are in the book.
Yes. That's what the book is. It's 70 recipes for fun, easy pairings to serve with cheeses. So the challenge initially was that I wanted to do a book that was pretty complicated, because I wanted to really explain the philosophy behind what we do and the thought process that goes into creating a different cheese plate every time.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted something that was going to be really easy for the readers to just open up and make a recipe and mm-hmm. buy that cheese and put them together.
Okay.
And
so you parted company with publisher number one.
We parted company. We never signed with them. We just right. started. We talked to them for a couple of months, and then mm-hmm. I decided this is not the cheese book I want to write. But he's right. We should write a cheese plate book.
Mm-hmm.
So then Lee and I started talking about what we really wanted the book to be.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a
was
few.
Was she in on it from the start?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I was, it was originally three of us. There was Brian Kaiser, myself, and Dimitri Saad. Mm.
Yeah.
And then over time, you know, things change, and it ended up just being the two of us that ended up writing the book. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of what Brian is saying is correct, but, you know, we did want this book to be, I wouldn't necessarily say more complicated, but yeah. to go into a little bit more detail about the thought process behind these composed cheese plates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one kind of, you know, thing that I'm able to look back on now is that while it was kind of hard to explain it, trying to put it down on paper, mm-hmm. I do think that our book is very easy to use, and it explains it in a user-friendly
yes,
way.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think agree. That, it's not too hard at all.
That's yeah. what took a long time. Mm-hmm. It was like 2 years of us then trying to figure out how do we take this really complicated thing we do and present it in a way that's actually not complicated, but is still mm-hmm. true to what we do.
Mm-hmm. Now, and the book's format is, it's got each cheese plate is introduced, and there's a long, well, 2 or 3 page narrative about a topic relating to that cheese plate.
Right.
So I have a question. Did you logically divide up the work so that you did the discussion and you did the recipes and the cheese plates?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
I am not the most inspired writer.
Okay.
And so the recipes were pretty natural for me. I mean,
right.
these were recipes
right.
that I had already been making for years.
Right.
You know, but even, you know, writing 70 recipes from start to finish.
Oh, I'm sure.
Multiple times. It takes a lot of effort.
And you have to make sure it's really clear you're not just writing it down for you. You're writing it down for probably lesser cooks.
Exactly. I mean, years of kitchen, it's, you know, kitchen recipes are like chicken scratch, and you know, you enter in methods that you already know how to do,
right,
but to explain
right.
it to somebody who may have never done that method before takes a little bit more explanation.
Right, right. Now, are you an English major?
I was an English major, yes.
And were you an English major, or were you a culinary major?
I went to New England Culinary Institute.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you match, you're bringing your talents to the table.
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a great collaboration, I think, because we bring very different things to the project, and I don't remember us ever talking about who's going to do what. It was just obvious.
It was obvious.
You do the things you do, and I do the things uh-huh. I do, and they fit together. Mm-hmm.
You have some very nice and sensible cheese information in between all the cheese plates. I really like how you took a cheese plate, either created it for the information mm-hmm. or the information came out of the cheese plate. That I thought that was a very good way to organize the book.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And sometimes you do rants on, like, you know, Brian is known
as
to
in real life.
Rant about the cheese and crackers dilemma or the bread dilemma, though I see you've given in to bread.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be the thing that's getting the most attention and the most comments. When I started working with cheese about, I don't know, 15 years ago in fancy fine dining restaurants that had cheese plates, I think it was just assumed that cheese was served with bread
mm-hmm.
and also assumed that cheese was served with either almonds or quince paste. Like
mm.
that was what everything was paired with. And so when I started thinking...
The basics.
Yeah. So when I started thinking about opening what became Casalula, which I wanted mm-hmm. to be a cheese-focused restaurant, it was really important to me that we paired each cheese with something that actually went with that cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we ended up doing ended up being a lot more than my original...
Inventive.
More inventive, yes.
Right.
I'm not the one that thought of putting fudge with cheese. But but Lee has a beautiful gift and a great palate, and mm-hmm. and is very creative and makes great things. So mm-hmm. We didn't want, and I say we, I didn't want to just assume that every cheese should go with bread or right. crackers, which is mm-hmm. what Americans think. I think right. a lot of Americans, right. if they eat a piece of cheese, it is on a cracker, and they act as if they can't right. not do that. right. And so,
but Casalula is trying to, you know, educate people. There are cheeses no one's heard of. There's,
yeah.
you know, condiments no one's heard of. It's part of your mission yeah. to elevate the cheese plate.
Absolutely.
And back when it opened, cheese, you know, we were behind then.
Right.
What year was it that Casalula opened?
2007.
Okay.
It's been almost 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So what I say in the book is that I wanted us to serve the right bread to go with cheeses that should go with bread, or the right crackers that mm-hmm. should go with cheeses that should have crackers, or no starch if that was what we thought was appropriate. And I lost that battle. Our customers just insist that there be bread. And so now we've always served bread with our plates, because it just, from the very beginning, mm-hmm. the audience did not tolerate no bread. So I would like people just to pause and think before they eat a piece of cheese. Right. Does mm-hmm. it really need to be right. on bread or crackers? What's being added? What's mm-hmm. being gained? Because mm-hmm. there are a lot of cheeses that benefit greatly from
right. They taste
something
great.
Something like that. Like soft spreadable cheeses are great on bread, and like blue cheeses can be sort of mellowed by bread mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. people who don't like super strong, sharp blue cheeses. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of, I'm not against bread. I just want, I love bread.
You want to be more flexible.
I just want people to think about it before right. they right. put their cheese on bread.
Well, sometimes I'd want to avoid bread because I don't want to fill my stomach with silly bread.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I want to eat more cheese.
Yeah.
Well, I think for some people it's just a little bit challenging because I've never really heard that before. It's mm-hmm. like the same, it could be some similar type people who always expect a bread basket at every meal.
Right.
There's definitely those diners out there. They go mm-hmm. to a restaurant, they would like the free bread with a little mm-hmm. bit of butter and olive mm-hmm. oil to start the meal.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of people that are just used to eating
right.
cheese.
Right.
And crackers.
That seems to be getting less popular, at least in mm-hmm. Brooklyn. It's bread baskets are disappearing or being charged for.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, so how long did the book take to from start to finish? How long, and what were the fun parts? What were the hard parts?
Well, you know, as Brian said, we did start on this about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But you know, we took our time. Mm-hmm. once we, did kind of pitch around our proposal and, got picked up by a publisher, we had 6 months to write the
book.
Get down
to business.
Start to finish.
Yeah. Okay.
And I actually think that timeline was really good. I think had it been any longer, we probably would have procrastinated.
We would have done it in the same amount of time, just
exactly
later.
Right. Yep. Felt pressured longer.
Yeah. It was a lot. It was a lot to do in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right that was a good time frame.
Now, how many condiments or pairings do you think have been served over the years at Casalula, and how did you select which to put in the book?
Oh, goodness. I would take a wild guess of, you know, perhaps I've created probably a little less than 200 condiments total
okay.
over the years.
Okay.
Most of my inspirations came from all over the place, from, you know, experiences of travel.
Mm-hmm.
I also like to get inspired by like family recipes mm-hmm. and kind of do different twists.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the green market mm-hmm. was a huge inspiration of mine. I mean, just, you know, seeing what was available,
seeing what was fresh and turning it into something.
And also talking with the cheesemakers at the market and see mm-hmm. what they like to do with their cheeses.
Okay.
And so, you know, I do have a pastry chef background. Mm-hmm. Cheese naturally pairs very well with sweet things, so that mm-hmm. was very easy for me to mm-hmm. produce. But I did go to culinary school for savory cooking, for culinary. Mm-hmm. So I love to do that as well, just not so much professionally. So landing at Casa Lula allowed mm-hmm. me to have my savory creative side.
To explore
side.
More of the savory side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those flavors, you know, just came out very, you know, simply, you know, with mm-hmm. Vegetable purees and roast things and pickles. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. pestos and such like
the
that.
The recipes seem fairly accessible to me, who is not a, you know, super chef.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are the exact recipes that we would use at the restaurant.
I was going to ask, are they the exact, or have you dumbed them down a bit for the audience?
I have not at all.
Oh, okay.
So I specifically chose these recipes because these are the ones that we kind of kept going back to throughout the years. Mm-hmm. You know, they were the ones that...
They were favorites, reliable.
Correct, mm-hmm. yep. And, you know, and easy to make mm-hmm. every day. You know, none of them really... all these recipes can be made ahead of time. Mm-hmm. None of them have to be made, you know, just before serving your cheese platter or mm-hmm. board. So these recipes were created for ease for the restaurant, mm-hmm. but also just, you know, as fun seasonal pairings to change up.
Okay. Okay. And then how did you both together decide which cheeses to feature, or was that more your job, Lee?
I'd say...
We decided together based on Lee's far superior knowledge
okay.
than mine.
Well, and she was picking which recipes she was going to include.
Right, yeah. Lee knows the recipes. Lee is better at imagining flavors together and saying, mm-hmm. oh, those will go together. Mm-hmm. And Lee now works for a cheese distributor. Mm-hmm. So she works day in and day out with lots and lots of cheeses. And mm-hmm. I don't work hands-on with the cheeses anymore. Mm-hmm. I run the business and other people get to do the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So we talked about everything, mm-hmm. but Lee was
the
creative force behind those
yeah.
choices.
I mean, and that was a process that, that was a list that changed almost all the way up until the photo shoot, to be
okay.
honest.
Okay.
And that was because we really wanted, we wanted to have a wide variety of milks, producers, domestic, imported,
right.
and we wanted it all to be well represented in each one of those chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So, and cheese is seasonal too.
Right.
So sometimes we were running into an issue as the shoot got pushed later and later mm-hmm. that perhaps
you
this cheese wasn't available.
Have it available.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to take a break. This is Cutting the Curd featuring Brian Kaiser and Lee Friend talking about composing the cheese plate. We'll be right back.
And this song is called Pianissimo Short by Tackstar. We'll be right back.
Today's program is brought to you by the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, period. Why? Lush grasslands, glacial water supply, fourth generation cheesemakers, combining old world tradition with the new ideas and highest standards. The very best milk. What do you think of when you think of Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh cheese curds. Or deep-fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Upland's Cheese Company. The operation behind the Pleasant Ridge Reserve cheese that's literally America's most awarded cheese. I think of the deliciously stinky Limburger and its long-storied history. I think about Raleigh's Dumbarton Blue, a perfect blend of English-style cheddar and notes of blue. I think of Emmy Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Champion at the World Championship Cheese Contest. Wisconsin is like the world champion of cheese, and once you start reading the list of cheeses made in Wisconsin on their website, you can see why. The Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board is a nonprofit organization funded entirely by Wisconsin's dairy farm families. Read more at eatwisconsincheese.com, and as soon as you're done listening to this podcast, eat Wisconsin cheese. It's a no-brainer.
Thanks. We're back with Brian Kaiser and Lee Friend talking about their book, Composing the Cheese Plate, the subtitle being Recipes, Pairings, and Platings for the Inventive Cheese Course. Nice subtitle.
Yeah, that only took a 1,000 man hours to, right. to get to.
Right, I'm sure there were many choices and many discussions that went into that.
Funny thing about publishing is that, you know, the authors don't necessarily own that front page.
Oh, right, I have heard that before.
Yeah.
Well, what I like about the book is how much freedom and encouragement you give to the reader. Often just saying, do what you want, here's our ideas, here's different things to mix and match, but you've got a palate, you've got a brain, just mix it up.
Yeah, I'm glad that came across. And I think when I was talking earlier about the first publisher that we ended up not working with, mm-hmm. The structure was a little too fixed, mm-hmm. and I really like the idea that we wanted to write a book that was giving people the tools so that they could use their own creativity and create their own cheese plates, mm-hmm. not dictate to them some idea that we have about how a cheese plate should look or right. what should be on it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, freedom is a good way to look at that.
Also, I think I noticed that it said you had recipe testers. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess I had imagined your guests at the restaurant would be just tasting your recipes, but did you have exact recipe testers who tested out whether you'd written it correctly?
Yes. So that's actually what the recipe testers were. These were people who I had given the recipe to. Then they went at home. They went home. They made the recipe. I had made a short little survey for them to fill out after mm-hmm. they had completed the recipe. You know, how difficult was this on a scale of 1 to 5? What wasn't clear? What was clear? Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions for other readers? How would you use this outside the cheese plate? Mm-hmm. And really, everyone had so much great feedback, and mm-hmm. it really helped shape clearer directions mm-hmm. for the readers. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, because these are things that I don't always think of as a chef because it feels natural to me.
Right. Now, would they give you what they had made so you could taste it to see if it was right or no?
No,
I didn't. Okay, because that would have been an interesting experience, too, to see if somebody else cooks it and it comes out completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so I didn't actually get to try any of them, but uh-huh. There were certainly some recipes that were a challenge.
Okay. Had they been to the restaurant? Were these friends? Were these cheese people? Were these mm-hmm. restaurant?
Yep, they were all personal friends and family.
Friends and family, but ranging from really great home cooks to people who never cook.
Right, like, right.
It was interesting getting the feedback from people who don't cook very often. Mm-hmm. It's helpful to help make things clearer.
Did you feel, Brian, when during your part of the writing, you were having a dialogue with the restaurant guests?
Like, was I writing to the restaurant guest?
Right, explaining more in depth to the restaurant guest.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I think I was trying to write to a broader audience than that.
Okay.
We're a 39-seat restaurant in a tiny space in New York City. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, most of the people who would be interested in this book haven't had the chance to be there. So mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking specifically of the restaurant guest. I was really trying to go broader.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much time would either of you have had at the restaurant when working there to spend talking to people, getting feedback?
Getting feedback just on cheese plates?
On cheese plates. On cheese plates. Like, which was, did you know this is a favorite? Everyone absolutely loves.
I spent years being in the dining room every night talking to guests, mm-hmm. Bringing them the cheese plates. Lee, how long were you doing that, actually making cheese plates for service?
So I worked at Casa Lula just about 7 years.
Oh, okay.
So it was quite a long time. And, you know, just over the years, I mean, really how this book kind of came together, not only being, you know, approached by another publisher, but our patrons at the restaurant also said, would constantly ask, you know, would you ever think about writing a book or can I have this recipe? Mm-hmm. And I really believe that, you know, recipes should be shared. They shouldn't be secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, naturally when this came up, I said, okay, let's do this. This we got this.
We'll share.
And we have our favorites from our regulars all past the years and, of course, family favorites as well.
Yeah. Right. Lots of people asked us if we were going to write a book, including Anne Saxelby, the last time we were on Cutting the Curd.
Oh, okay.
Lee brought in a bunch of pairings and Anne,
for her to taste.
Anne was tasting them on the air and said, you guys should do a book.
That's great. Was anything decided to be too difficult for the book? Anything that you make in the restaurant that's just too tricky?
I would say the most challenging recipe in the book is the marshmallows.
Okay.
And this is because you have to have a KitchenAid for it. Mm. So you do have to have, you know, a pretty expensive piece of equipment in your kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's easily done by hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you are dealing with hot boiling sugar, which can be pretty scary. But other than that, I would say that most of the recipes are for an easy beginner skill level in the kitchen.
Yeah. And I don't think we ever talked about a recipe being too difficult and took it out, did we?
No, I purposely didn't. Honestly,
I didn't
choose any. And to be honest, I can't even think that there's any that challenging that I've ever made.
Right. Okay. Are these the favorites from the restaurant? Like, do people say, tell you what condiments to put on the cheese plate? Do they come in and they're regulars and they want, one thing or another?
Yeah, it's kind of fun to see how some of the customers approach the cheese plates because sometimes they'll come back and say, I want that cheese again.
Right.
And sometimes they come back and they say, I want that condiment again, whatever cheese you put with it.
Yeah,
and
I was wondering.
When they do, it's usually fudge or
or
brittle. Like those are the ones that people request most
the
often.
The desserty ones. Yeah. Well, those chocolate graham crackers are quite amazing also.
Well, I think it's the desserty ones, but it's also the surprising ones. Like the things that people go, I would never have thought of putting a saffron marshmallow with cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have it with the right cheese, it seems like they were made to go together. Like it's like magic. People like the surprises.
Okay. Now, how do you think, how has the restaurant changed over the years in terms of percentage of American cheese served or
dramatically
featured? Yeah.
When we opened, we were trying to have 40 cheeses at a time.
Yeah.
Obviously representing all different styles, milks, regions. I'm pretty sure in 2007 we couldn't have done an all-American selection.
Mm-hmm. Even for a cheese plate.
And like for 40 cheeses.
Oh, okay.
We could do
could
do a 5 cheese plate that was all-American, and we do that all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
But we couldn't have done 40 cheeses that were really, truly great cheeses and that represented all the categories.
Mm-hmm.
And now that wouldn't be a problem at all.
Right.
October is American Cheese Month.
Oh, okay.
And we're in October now, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And so are you heavily...
We usually do an all-American cheese selection for the month of October.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Ah.
So
I didn't know that. Because I remember when I first came to Casa Lula, I thought it was quite European. And you had many European cheeses I had never heard of, so I loved that.
Yeah, but definitely try to have stuff that's new to a lot of people.
You have unique things.
I think it was probably 2/3 European when we opened, and now it's closer to 50-50.
Oh, good. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, I also noticed that you talk about Skittles in the book.
It's not like there's a chapter on Skittles.
Well, no. But isn't that foreshadowing? Like,
or
an unusual coincidence?
Yeah, Skittles is in the zeitgeist, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. Who talked about the Skittles politically? Who?
Was it Trump's campaign manager?
Or I think it wasn't one of his sons.
Oh, yes.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but maybe
a son or a daughter.
Maybe the Trump family had just...
daughter's husband.
Yes. I think you're right. Maybe the Trump family ordered composing the cheese plate from Amazon early, and they got one of the first copies and so had Skittles on the brain because I suggested...
Not pairing Skittles
with Jesus.
Yes,
that's in one of my other. I don't know. It's not a rant, but that's in the rules of There Are No Rules.
I think I read that page first because it's early on before the Skittles controversy.
Yeah,
and then I happened to see it again today and cracked up that you had foreshadowed Skittles.
Yeah, what I was saying in that part of the book is that we like to say there are no rules. So take everything we say as a suggestion, not a command.
Right. It's one of your freedom speeches.
Yeah. And because I'm about freedom.
Right.
In
right.
America.
But you did say.
But it says there are some rules. Like
no Skittles with cheese.
Don't pair your cheeses with something like Skittles that's so sweet it's going to totally overwhelm the flavor of the cheese.
Would you consider M&Ms?
I bet Lee would.
I love M&M's.
Absolutely. Like M&M, chopped up M&M bark with peanuts. You
right.
know, peanut M&M's.
Right.
Yeah. I would like an artisanal equivalent of M&M's, perhaps. Something without high fructose corn syrup. But
M&M's
but yeah.
are pretty good, and they come in many different colors.
Yeah.
At the M&M store. Anyway.
I just told you that I can't eat chocolate
before
the show.
And
now you're taunting me.
Oh, I'm very sorry. I take it back. I don't mix pre-show and during show information.
But not to worry. There's plenty of chocolate in the book.
Okay, good. Yeah. Now, my thinking is, I have a question. What are the categories of condiments? When I was trying to figure it out, I put fruits and chutneys, vegetable stuff, nuts, mustards, and pickles. Does that cover it?
Yes. You know, I've actually sat down and tried to kind of categorize them before.
Yeah.
And the only other one that I would kind of put in there to separate some of the sweets would be confections.
Okay.
Because while there are definite, you know, poached fruits and curds and jams and jellies,
mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily think they have that kind of sweetness. They're more on a natural sweet side.
Right.
Where the confections are going to be very sugar-based.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which would be more of the brickles, even though that's also
correct.
Nutty...
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right. Because there's some overlapping ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some
and
nut
bacon.
Brittles that are very sweet.
Where does bacon fall?
Bacon is in its awesome own category of the salty sweet.
Right,
you know, which
I forgot bacon.
Yeah, salty yeah. sweet is kind of the ultimate pairing combination.
Yeah,
because cheese itself is that as well.
Right. Now I wanted to talk just a little. Brian, you have a new project up your sleeve.
Yes.
You're releasing a book and making a restaurant in another city at the same time.
Yes. We are opening a Casa Lula in Pittsburgh right now on the north side.
Is it going to be called Casa Lula?
It is. It's going to be in a new cultural center that is being built called Alphabet City. So it's going to be called Casa Lula at Alphabet City.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that these two projects, one is writing the book and one is opening a second location of Casa Lula. Very different projects, big time-consuming ones, both that I've been trying to do for about 4 years, mm-hmm. each of which I thought would take about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there was actually a moment about 2 months ago where the opening of the restaurant and the release date of the book were scheduled to be the same day. Like it all comes together. But of course it's a restaurant, so construction delays have pushed
That's
us back.
That's taken over.
So we should be open in about a month.
That's a lot
November.
On your plate.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Now how big is
In a lot
the,
of different places.
How is the restaurant in Pittsburgh different?
It's going to be bigger than the Casa Lula here.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 500 square feet in the main dining room and mm-hmm. 500 square foot basement here in New York. We're going to have about 1,800 square feet upstairs and 1,500 downstairs. So 60 seats instead of 40 seats, bigger tables, more space in between them.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City, we can squeeze people into the restaurant with Vaseline and a shoehorn, and nobody complains that they have to climb over a stranger to get to their table. It's part of our charm of being in New York City.
Right.
In other cities where real estate is less expensive, there's no real need for that.
Mm-hmm. What about the menu?
We have a chef in Pittsburgh, a different chef than New York, who's really great. And so we're going to bring like five or six of the Casalula classics, the pig's ass sandwich, the mac and cheese, the stuffed peppadew peppers. Mm-hmm. So all the things that are always on the Casalula menu will be the same, but the things that change seasonally and rotate in and out, those will be different. Those will be from a different chef, but still following the same, you know, small plates, comforting, sort of craveable, casual food. We'll have a full kitchen there. We just have like a convection oven and a panini press here in New York, so he'll be able to do more. We'll have a fryer. We'll have a private dining room. We'll be able to do private events. So the way I look at it is we're trying to open up Casalula exactly as it is here, except changed in the ways that it has to change based on the locale, and that turns out to be quite a few changes.
And where will you be? How will you split your time once it opens?
This is its own show, Diane.
Okay, we'll have to come back for that.
I'm gonna spend about three quarters of my time in Pittsburgh as that's getting open, and then hopefully over time get more toward half and half.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Thank you very much.
It's been very delightful talking to both of you about your book. I love your book.
Thank you.
It's Composing the Cheese Plate. It's Brian Kaiser, owner of Casalula, and Lee Friend, his former pastry chef and chef, with a really fun book. Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Diane.
Thank you, Diane. I brought some Wisconsin cheese to eat after the show.
Oh, perfect.
Wow. The sponsors will be so happy.
What a coincidence.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.